Mr. Hollander.
Thank you. May it please the Court, Counsel. Your Honors, this case involves the review of the District Court's ruling concerning an evidentiary hearing of a motion to enforce a settlement agreement filed by the defendant, SBC. At all times during this case, the burden remained upon SBC to prove that Ms. Magalanes' former attorney, Jonathan Goldman, had authority to settle her employment discrimination case.
Let me ask, do I recall correctly that she had paid $7,500 down payment to her lawyer?
Yes. Mr. Goldman was handling the case on an hourly basis. That was the initial retainer.
And so that the settlement would be effectively $2,500?
Well, actually, the settlement statement that was introduced into evidence before the district court demonstrated that Ms. Magalanes, had the settlement gone through, she would have netted about $1,826 in this case. Mr. Goldman had requested an additional retainer from Ms. Magalanes, which was not paid by her. So, in this case, SBC failed to demonstrate that Mr. Goldman had authority to settle her case. Rather, the evidence before the district...
She nets $1,800. That's like assuming the blow-off of the $7,500.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
That assumes a blow-off of the $7,500 fee.
Right. He had requested, my recollection was, an additional $2,500 following her deposition. She didn't pay that sum. And then shortly thereafter, he represented to Ms. Alaban, counsel for SBC, that he had authority to settle her case bottom line for $10,000.
Were all those facts before Judge Duryagan?
I don't believe they were. There was a status hearing, I believe, on January 10, 2006, before Judge Duryagan. There was a representation, I think, by both counsel, Mr. Goldman and Ms. Alaban, that a settlement had been achieved. And based upon the oral representation, Judge Duryagan dismissed the case, finding that there was a settlement.
Was there any representation made to Judge Hibbler that the issue of settlement was already disposed of in the appeal?
From the first time the case came before Your Honors, or?
Yeah.
I just don't recall.
There really wasn't. You went back to and proceeded on the assumption that you were to determine, the court was to determine whether there was sufficient evidence to support a settlement.
Right, whether there was authority given to Mr. Goldman.
Right.
So, in effect, there were two hearings on the subject of settlement. One was reversed when the finding was there was a settlement. Reversed, set it back down, said,
correct.
Try it.
Right, well, there's an evidentiary hearing, correct.
And so then they retried the issue only of whether or not there was a settlement.
Correct. That is correct.
Kind of fascinating.
Yeah, we think so.
Two whacks at the apple. But
well, in this case, Ms. Magalanes has always been unwavering. She wanted her day in court. She wanted her jury trial. She never got that.
But you, the question is that you never, when the case went to Judge Hibbler, you never argued the settlement issue is off the table. We have to set a trial date and let's resolve this case.
No, the sole thing that was before Judge Hibbler was the evidentiary hearing, which happened last July. Whether
it was sent back down for trial, saying there was no evidence that she had settled.
Right. Then the defendant filed a motion to enforce, and Judge Hibbler set that down for hearing. And obviously, when he ruled, finding that there was granted that motion, essentially dismissed her case. There's no opportunity.
I understand that, but I'm curious about how it got to that stage of the game, since we had already said there was no evidence on what was presented to the court. The issue before this court was whether there was sufficient evidence to support the finding that she had settled it. We said no, send it back down for trial.
Well, I think Judge Hibbler found that it was necessary to have an evidentiary hearing whether authority was granted on the settlement. So, in this case, Ms. Magalanes, a 29-year employee of SBC, again, was unwavering. She felt very determined about her case, felt that she had been wrong, wanted her day in court, repeatedly expressed that to Mr. Goldman.
Well, are you in agreement that the issue before the judge was appropriately the question of whether there was a settlement?
I don't think Judge Hibbler, I think Judge Hibbler should have set it down for trial. I think Your Honor should resolve the issue.
That wasn't my question. Are you in agreement that what was done was appropriate in terms of...
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. By Mr. Goldman?
Yeah.
Well, no.
Was it appropriate for the court to hear the issue of settlement again, since it had already been up to this court?
Now, I think Your Honor should have previously ruled on it, and I think the case should have proceeded to trial.
Well, did anybody suggest that to His Honor?
I don't think that's in the record.
Well, you mean it's not in the record that it didn't happen?
Well, I suppose that's correct.
Interesting.
In the instant case, the district court abused its discretion in this case in finding that the plaintiff acquiesced in the settlement between her then-counsel, Mr. Goldman, and Ms. Alaband. Two witnesses testified at the evidentiary hearing, plaintiff and Mr. Goldman. Based upon the testimony offered by the witnesses and the rationale offered by the court in this case, the court clearly abused its discretion in finding that Ms. Magdalenas provided her counsel authority to settle her case for $10,000. Now, a few undisputed facts in this case. We know that Ms. Magdalenas gave her deposition testimony on November 4th of 2005. Several days later, on November 7th of 2005, Mr. Goldman initiates a telephone call with Ms. Magdalenas expressing his opinion that she did not perform well or appear well at her deposition. According to the unequivocal testimony of the plaintiff at the evidentiary hearing, she testified that Mr. Goldman advised her that I have authority to settle the case for $20,000.
I think this case is really a mess because, and the problem, it seems to me, is that, rightly or wrongly, probably wrongly, she hired a lawyer on an hourly basis here and not on a contingency. Did she shop this case? I mean, that doesn't make any difference to the issue we have here.
I didn't represent her in the underlying.
Now she's paying, she paid one lawyer, would have been $8,000 or something.
Right.
And now she's paying other lawyers.
Well, she was obviously very.
This is a case where she originally, at best, wanted $20,000 or something to settle the case.
Well, no, that she's never said that. She never gave Mr. Goldman any authority to settle the case. In fact, she was very upset when. When she had a conversation with Mr. Goldman, the representation of the testimony before Judge Hebler was, Mr. Goldman told her, "I have authority to settle the case for $20,000." Now, it may very well be that Mr. Goldman is trying to pressure her to settle the case for $20,000 or to procure authority to settle the case for $20,000. But in this case, she did not never gave Mr. Goldman authority to settle the case. In that case, again, she did not give Mr. Goldman authority to settle for $20,000. Further, at the evidentiary hearing, Mr. Goldman was less than clear that he talked with the plaintiff about releasing her arbitration labor claim and did not disclose what the net amount of the settlement would be, the $1,800, to her. On November 22nd, another phone call occurred, and Mr. Goldman again discussed the prospect of settlement and conveyed an offer of $10,000. Ms. Magdalenas, again, was very clear. She never gave authority to Mr. Goldman to settle the case for $10,000. Now, in its ruling, the district court granted the defendant's motion and enforced the settlement and found that Ms. Magdalenas consented in this case. First, the district court said that the plaintiff had contact with Jonathan Goldman after November 22, 2005, the time she orally terminated his representation. And the court found that, I guess she wasn't credible when she had this contact, but I don't think that was unusual at all. In fact, there was a status hearing before Judge Zeryagian, January 10th of 2006, which actually Ms. Magdalenas attended. So clearly she was entitled to know the status of her case. And further, she was upset, she was outraged, and Mr. Goldman had attempted to settle her case without her consent. The court also found that the plaintiff was sophisticated when she told Mr. Goldman that she wanted a jury trial. Well, one, I don't think that shows sophistication. I don't think it's germane to the issue of authority. She was unwavering again. She never gave authority to Mr. Goldman to settle the case. And then a combined reason, the district court said that the plaintiff testified by Mr. Goldman's statement, I have authority to settle the case, and the court found that lawyers don't call and tell their clients they have authority to settle the case. Again, I think it's probably a situation where Mr. Goldman said, I would like authority to settle the case for $20,000, or I want you to settle the case for $20,000. And also, I don't believe there's a meeting of the minds here because the release was not explicitly discussed with Ms. Magdalenas concerning the release of her arbitration claim, nor was the net amount of the settlement. And for those reasons, we respect the request that this court reverse the district court's order enforcing the settlement.
Thank you, Mr. Hollander. Ms. Oliband.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Kendra Oliband on behalf of the defendant. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, I'd like to first just...
Who do you represent?
The defendant, Illinois Bell.
Then why does your brief say SBC I don't even think that was ever an entity.
Well, the original complaint, Your Honor, was filed against SBC. There was an amended complaint filed that changed the identity of the defendant, Illinois Bell, who was the proper defendant. Unfortunately, in the appeal, during the appeal process, that was not reflected in the caption.
I'm referring to the caption of your brief. I don't understand why you don't caption your brief in the name of the real party in interest rather than something that doesn't exist and, so far as I know, has never existed.
SBC previously existed.
No, there was an SBC Inc., but your brief names the defendant as just SBC, just initials, not a corporation, not an entity. It's like suing Lake Michigan.
It was our attempt, Your Honor, to avoid any confusion as to the...
By the way, does Illinois Bell Telephone Company still exist? Okay.
I'd like to start, before I talk about the merits of the appeal, with clarifying the procedural path of this case. There's only been one evidentiary hearing in this case. The presentation before Judge Duryurgyan in January of 2006 was simply a status hearing, at which time myself and Mr. Goldman represented to the court that it was our belief that a settlement had been reached. It was at that point that the judge, without any evidentiary hearing, then dismissed the case, which then brought the case up to Your Honors. The case was then remanded, and we, after the case was remanded to Judge Hibbler, at that point requested an evidentiary hearing so that all the evidence could be presented to the district court relating to the party's settlement. There was no objection expressed by the plaintiffs to that evidentiary hearing, so that's the procedural posture or path that this case has taken.
Okay, on the question of whether there ever was really a settlement here, this just doesn't seem to me to be the way a case is settled. You usually get a written stipulation and a proposed order of dismissal, or you have the parties in court and they put it on the record, they agree, and everybody goes home.
Well,
that never happened here.
There was not, other than our presentation to Judge Duryurgyan, we hadn't gotten that far.
So the answer to Judge Evans' question is no, there was no.
Well, I would respectfully disagree that this was an unusual path to settlement. The both parties' counsel were communicating by phone.
The parties between them, the lawyers can't settle a case between them. Well, the parties have to settle a case. What indication is there in the record that the plaintiff agreed to such a settlement, which strikes me as being kind of silly at its face? She pays out $7,500 and she gets a cheap chance of getting back part of it?
Well,
a small part of it?
There's ample evidence in the record from Attorney Goldman that he obtained his client's...
I understand that, but he is not the one who can settle. It is his client that can settle, not him.
Right, but...
And there's nothing that shows that she was ever in court to say that she agreed to the settlement. Nothing in writing saying she would agree to the settlement. What, other than Goldman saying that he wanted to settle a case because he didn't want to try it, what is there?
His testimony that he obtained, in fact, her permission to settle on
but
her
you
behalf.
You see, standing by itself, that doesn't mean much, does it? Because the one who can settle is she. And there's no written statement or oral statement or anything from the lady in question that she settled.
Well, Your Honor, this case is, this court has repeatedly held that oral settlements are enforceable.
Yeah, but if she had said, had been in court and said, yes, I agree to the settlement and changed her mind, you've got a different ballgame. But she was never in court to say that she agreed to the settlement, was she?
Not in court. She did not.
Get away. We're moving right along. She said, her lawyer says that she told him that she could settle. You'd have to believe the lawyer implicitly to agree to that. And you'd have to agree that she agreed to take a settlement, getting back a small portion of the money she'd already given him.
Right. I mean, that was her option to enter into an hourly arrangement.
No, it was her option to enter into an hourly arrangement.
That was her mistake, then.
It may have been, Your Honor.
But it was her option to settle or not settle, and there's no evidence here that I can find that she agreed to the settlement.
Well,
no more than there was the first time around.
We would respectfully disagree with that, Your Honor. There's been a,
well,
there was
a... Well, you can go ahead and disagree with it. I mean, I don't expect you to agree with it. You can confess error. Just tell you how it looks to me.
Lawyer, the lawyer has certainly an interest, I would think, here. getting this case settled and getting out, and he's got his money, and that's the end of it as far as he's concerned.
Well, he was being paid by the hour, actually. He had motivation to prolong the case.
Well, she's running out of money. Pretty soon she's getting to the point where she's paid more money than this case is worth.
There's no evidence, though, to indicate that he had any reason to believe she was not going to give him the additional retainer. When he talked to her about the retainer in early November, she did not say she wouldn't pay it. As a matter of fact, she testified during her testimony that she told him she didn't care how much the case cost, that she wanted to proceed. So Goldman didn't have any reason to believe that she wasn't going to keep paying her bills.
Well, except that she's going to run out of money. And he had other things to do. Go ahead.
Why doesn't Goldman get her in and say, this is the offer, $10,000, sign that you agree, and that'll be the end of it.
He did. But
no, he didn't. She never
signed anything.
He
attempted to, and she wouldn't sign it, which means she didn't agree to the settlement.
That was after the deal had already been struck. She had verbally given him her authority. He then struck the deal, an enforceable agreement with the employer, and it was after that that she got cold feet and reneged on the deal. And this case comes down to a credibility determination. The judge listened to the testimony of both Goldman and Magdalenas about whether she granted him authority. And because of her very consistently inconsistent testimony, the judge found Goldman to be more credible, that he, settled this case with her authority, and then she just later changed her mind. If I could briefly address the two additional points raised by plaintiff relating to the labor arbitration. There were two letters that plaintiff testified that she received in November, which set forth the details of the settlement. And both of those letters very clearly indicated that the labor arbitration would be covered by any settlement. And Mr. Goldman testified that she never articulated any objection to that. She never testified at all during the hearing that she had any concern with any particular term. She simply repeated her mantra that she didn't want to settle at all. And secondly, with respect to the fees issue, that was a private matter to be addressed between her and her attorney. The fact of the matter is she gave her attorney the authority to settle for $10,000, and he negotiated a deal based on that authority.
Where did the $10,000 go?
It was never paid since she never...
So it never went. So if you were to win this case, you would have to send a check to $10,000
to correct.
Goldman, and a check made payable to both Goldman and her.
That's correct. Well, the terms of the agreement outline how the checks would be cut, but that's correct. We would issue checks if this ruling is affirmed.
And how much would she get?
Well, I mean, we don't have all the details about what she's paid Goldman so far. Based on a document that Goldman produced during these proceedings, she would get back somewhere in the vicinity of $8,100. She would get back. Now, she had already paid to Goldman
$7,500,
but she would, you know, get that return then.
She'd get the $7,500 back? Is that part of the agreement?
The agreement the document produced by Goldman indicates that he would then return to her out of the settlement money about $8,100.
Yeah, but he keeps the $7,500 he's already gotten.
Correct.
So she gets the difference between $7,500 and $8,100.
Correct, but that $7,500...
She gets $600 is what she's getting.
I think a little more than that. But that $7,500 was already gone. That was an agreement that they made that he would be paid by the hour.
Yep, I know.
For these reasons, Your Honor, we'd respectfully request that the ruling be affirmed in its entirety.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Hollander?
In this case, a written statement was sent by Mr. Goldman to Ms. Magdalenas on 12-7 of 05, preliminarily outlined the settlement agreement. As Your Honor has noted, she didn't sign it. Then a week later, on 12-14 of 05, Mr. Goldman then sent the draft settlement agreement. Again, she did not sign it. In this case, I think, again, as you noted, Mr. Goldman did have a motivation to settle the case. He had noticed that depositions of the decision makers, I believe three depositions on the day discovery closed on 12-9-05. Before those depths were taken, he represented to opposing counsel that the case had settled. He had requested a retainer from Ms. Magdalenas, an additional retainer of $2,500, which was not paid. As Ms. Magdalenas testified at the hearing, she was very upset with the representation and basically was not going to pay him the remaining retainer. So clearly, I think Mr. Goldman not only had potential fees that were on the hook, but cost as well, that he was not going to be reimbursed for that. And I think the evidence in this case is clear that Ms. Magdalenas never accepted a settlement. She never reneged, but she never accepted in the first place. And with that, again, we respectfully request that Your Honor reverse the district court's ruling. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement.